Live from Los Angeles, the Bachelor Masters here kicking off the new Bachelorette season. Might have noticed we posted a countdown episode a little over a week ago. We have some great stories. If you haven't heard that, check it out. And today we are going to be talking about the first hour and a half of content that ABC has given us in the world. If you haven't seen us on Twitter, we're at Bachelor Masters, and on Facebook, just look for Bachelor Masters. I'm Craig. Over there is Chris, and over there is EZR.
Hi.
Hey, guys. You know, I don't want to set the bar low at all for this episode, but I think last week's episode, it was so good that if we flubbed a little this week, it wouldn't matter. That's how good our first, you know, it's like when a book starts really well and then you hit a lull.
You forget it.
It's good again. It's no problem.
Right. You always want your first chapter to be the best chapter.
Because, and ECR, this is one of your observations that I agree with. The first episode in the show is usually not the strongest. So it's good we did that last week.
Yeah, it's like a trial run for us. But the first episode is just such a, I mean, they've never been able to not make it messy. You know, it feels like at the end of the night when you don't really fit in that dress anymore and everyone's ties are loose, and it just has never been able to be cohesive feeling. And like I've told you guys,
an analogy before, I would never use in my normal life.
it feels the way they look. And even though you've only sat through the best parts, right, you're still like, oh, like, do I have to go to work tomorrow? You know, that's the feeling I've had in the past. It's just really messy and cringy. And yeah, but this one was, I felt like there was at least some direction a little bit more than usual, yeah, but maybe because I never watch it. So
it seemed like the guys came out of the limo a little bit more tactically. Like there's a little bit more of a flow who they decided to spotlight, and they kind of grouped those together at the beginning. And then they kind of like, as you start to get tired of the intros, they kind of tailed off the intros. And
yeah, I agree. And I think whether it was pre-planned or produced, people had strategies that they seemed to be working on. So some of which I think were people's own strategies. Some felt like they were imposed by the show, but made it entertaining.
Like the bird guy.
Who's the bird guy?
The chicken.
Chicken.
Oh,
if I get chosen over a chicken, there's something wrong with the universe.
But they know as well as any, like 14 seasons plus all,
yeah,
the Bachelor
of course the
seasons.
Chicken's gonna get chosen.
Everyone knows that is the thing to do. But if too many people do it, it's like that math theory. Too many people do it, then you get lost in a sea of too many people doing it. You have to hope you're one of the only ones, and he was,
yeah,
because people were like, I'm going to stand out with this other thing. Right. So it diversifies the numbers.
But don't you, I feel like that's the safe strategy based on what I've seen that gets you to the middle or maybe the upper middle at best in the show. Like you're going, right, to make it to week six and get caught. Like shark girl is what I'm thinking of.
Dolphin shark. No matter what, it's funny because an animal outfit, period, will get you to the second week at least.
Right.
But, right, so it's really weird because it's not really unique. Everyone does it. We remember Penguin Guy, and then there was Dolphin. I mean, I can tell you a list of them. I think a lot of Bachelor fans can. But they always, it's that, like, level of, like, within the commonplace uniqueness. Like, I think, you know, they use the word nerd a lot. It's kind of like that. Now you can say it, and it's not really a nerd. It's this kind of cleaned up version of a nerd. So it's like this cleaned up version of unique, you know, like,
yeah,
they're not really being unique. They're just being the safest route to be a little bit different.
Well, I like that Harry Potter continues to be the franchise's symbol for nerddom.
Yes.
Too. We had someone with
good
that Harry Potter
Chris.
Tattoo.
That's exactly what Craig said last time.
Was it the Lord Voldemort's real name? What was the actual name that was tattooed?
I think it was, and I apologize to all Harry Potter fans that I'm not going to get it exactly right, but Expecto Patronus.
Oh, that's
a spell.
That's Harry's big spell, right? Right.
I thought that was his, like,
conjuring. Wizards have the power to do, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in trouble with my girlfriend if she hears this, because she's a big Harry Potter fan and I didn't get it exactly right. Sorry.
Well, I'm glad we had this long intro because it allowed us to skip over the let's make Becca a cosmopolitan woman history lesson we just got on our unofficial sponsor Hulu playback, where they have her, you know, crying from last season and doing yoga and hanging out with her mom and walking through Minneapolis. And now here we are with the super duper past bachelorette's power hour, where they all show their rings.
Oh my gosh. You know, I want to kind of make clear that Caitlin and Rachel are definitely stand your ground people. And Caitlin and JoJo picked the best guy of their season. Like, they have those things in common. But they said something that was so kind of frustrating, like the first impression rose and the first kiss winner.
Right.
That doesn't really happen. That's not normal. You know, that's a new thing. And that doesn't happen with the men at all, actually. It only happens with the women. It was an interesting thing that they said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear you clarify that, because that surprised me. I hadn't noticed that. I guess I've seen two of the three former Bachelorette season, but that is something that they both pick their first impression people.
Right, to use the word. But I think the easier, you're right. They all have certain overlapping things in common, but it is that there was a lot more directness in the guys they ended up with than all previous seasons. In fact, Caitlin Barstool, or whatever her name is, she kind of wanted that hipster dude right from the beginning. There wasn't anyone else that was going to get in the way.
Exactly. JoJo, too, honestly. JoJo and Caitlin had this number one guy because he was, I mean, JoJo had a football player, right? Or like a brother of a pro football player.
Yeah.
Well, we've been over this a number of times, but she got runner up the previous season by what's his name? Who was a high school football star, and so she one-upped them by getting with an actual pro football player.
Oh, with Ben? Yeah. Well, but both of them, what I'm saying is JoJo and Caitlin both got, like, the head and shoulders above everyone else number one dude.
Like, Kristen's a complicated situation. Didn't she sleep with Nick after Nick came on the show halfway through?
She did, but
she still ended up with that. I'm not really into hipsters. So I think his name was.
He was, and he was like a little. He was a little bit of everything. Like, he was dipped a little bit of everything, but he was clearly the best looking guy, the most successful guy. Like, compared to Nick, Nick is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go against Sean because it's just not worth it. But
okay. Whoa! Nick has been on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah,
that's his claim. It just didn't feel like, you know, if you're gonna pick, if you're just trying to pick the number one guy, which I can see girls doing, you want to pick the most successful person in the room, and I'm guilty. Right. You want that person that everyone else is jealous of.
Let's talk about the first impression rose then that Becca chose, which is the goofy guy who does the impersonation of Chris Farley, right?
Oh, yeah. Is his name Blake?
Blake?
Yeah.
Who actually could be, could end up being the top guy. I mean, he came across a lot better than I think we presented him last week during our countdown.
Blake is the ox guy. The guy she picked was Garrett.
What's his name?
Garrett,
that's right. And there's some minor controversy because apparently someone went through all of his Instagram likes, and he apparently liked a couple not politically correct posts, I guess you could say.
He's from Reno, Nevada. He likes to hunt and fish and all this stuff. But
normal dude. I mean, he's as unnormal or normal as the dude that Rachel ended up with.
Right.
Yeah, and she made the comment that she could take him home and he would have gotten along with her dad, who's since passed away. But I saw that, and I agree that he came across.
Exactly. Yeah. That seems like a safe choice, though, doesn't it?
There's nothing wrong with safe, right?
Well, but that's not first impression kind of material if you're safe.
Yeah.
Right, and this guy seemed, I think she's being smart in a way, because this guy seemed more her speed looks-wise as compared to Ari. Like, they seem kind of even, you know. And he's the minivan guy that came with all this stuff already.
Garrett,
so he does seem safe to me. Yeah, Garrett, the first.
Yeah, you know me. I like to put numbers on people.
Uh-huh.
and I'm a big believer in the you get to go up to or down to, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know this, Craig.
I think we talked about it very early on in Bachelor Masters history when it was only you and me, Chris.
All right.
Sarah joined us. But there was a short-lived show called Joey, which starred Joey from Friends.
Yeah.
And the whole show was him bashing on his, like, ugly cousin that he lived with.
Jesus. I mean, it sounds really horrible.
But there's this one part where he's like, here's how it works. You can go up to or you can go down to. So you're a 5. That means that you can date a 7 or a 3. Me, I'm a 9. So that means I can date a 7 or a hypothetical 11.
He was definitely not a 9 when he got, you know, he's gray-haired. Oh, 10
he never
years
really
into
was
Friends.
Like, he never really, that he was goofy. That was what I think made him attractive. You never put him on a magazine cover. Of course, he did because he was famous. But
in the early 90s, he was considered like a cute, like he had floppy hair.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
Checked all the boxes. I don't know. According to Friends episodes I've seen where I'm like, no, but to all of them, but whatever. You know, they chose
him.
But
here's
him,
the thing, Garrett, I think I would have just based on our last rundown or last episode, I think, you know, I pegged him. His number was not anything significant, but based on like hearing him talk and how he acts, and I think his number is definitely higher after this first episode. That said, I think I've never been a huge fan of Becca. She's just not my type. I don't think she's ugly by any means, but I think her number has kind of gone up a little bit too. Just the way she carries herself, she seems to have good personality, and she handles herself well amongst the chaos of the first episode. So I think they're both kind of high end of what their numbers could be. Becca might be more than 2 higher than he is, just based on base genetics. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, this could be the first beyond 2 relationship.
Have you seen Becca's parents? Like I can't be the one who criticizes this woman's looks. But I can say this, that I think is super important. I know you guys did not see Jillian's season, but no. Jillian was someone that was, and I'll make this quick, I promise, but Jillian was someone that was scorned 10 years ago. She was, like Becca, a brunette, and I think that, unfortunately, the kinds of men that go on Bachelor want the Emilys, the Laurens, the blondes, perfect Barbie girls. And Jillian had kind of a big nose, had the same kind of hair length as Becca, just kind of everything was right except certain things were off, right? So because Becca's not a supermodel, there's a lot of like space for bachelors to come on, not just for her, but for their own marketing reasons. And I think it's not really going to happen with Emily and Lawrence, but it's not what boring men want. You know, they want this, whatever, this trophy wife.
What you're saying. There's a certain stigma when it comes to blondes on TV and like, We could go on and on about that, but I don't think Becca's devalued for any reasons because of what she looks like or how her hair color is.
No, right, you're right. It's just a coincidence that they're both brunettes, and it's a coincidence. It's not really a coincidence that the other two are blondes, but there's something about that's off about, like, she's not like Tia. Tia's a good example of like the brunette girl that maybe all these guys wanted to meet.
Right.
Right. And I just think that because Becca is not, they owed her to be the Bachelorette. Like, if she wasn't the Bachelorette, I think there'd be a lot of issues right now.
But I do think they've gone back to finally having a Bachelorette. Well, it started with Rachel, who has a career, you know, lives by herself. Like, and I think the guys, there was no point where I was like, okay, they're outclassing her because they actually have jobs and she's just some pretty face. Like, she carries herself like a grown-up independent woman, which is nice. And I think the guys that are coming for her attention have that same, you know, they're young professionals.
Well, it was Tia's to lose, for sure. But I think Becca, despite her hair color, never mind all that, I think I'm explaining myself wrong. But I think Becca is not the most drop-dead gorgeous woman they could have picked. And so a lot of men on this season, as we kind of saw, are going to get, have a lot of space to advertise themselves as people, and they consider it a marketing. Happens more with men than it does with women. That's what it seems like. Chris, what do you think?
Well, she seems to be on guard for that kind of thing. So at least there's a perception. Right. She is really ready to send someone home.
Yeah,
and
that's true. Sending the guy home, I think, really established the tone. It established kind of it whether or not she did it on purpose. It addressed kind of what you're saying, EZR.
Yeah. You know, that was an interesting moment because up until then, I thought she's not as exciting as Caitlyn was to me as a bachelorette until she did that, because that means that, well, we could talk about that guy, the lazy-eyed Jason Lee type.
Yeah, what's his name? Do we know?
His name is, starts with the Jake.
All right. Noted. I'll still call him Minnesota, but noted.
The other guy's, Garrett's from Minnesota, too, apparently, like, original.
Oh, okay.
So, oh, well. But he's gone forever anyway. So he is interesting because she correctly pointed out this awesome, you know, thing that, you know what, why are you here? I think it was, it's very different from Nick's season, if you remember, that he called someone out that they had a one-night stand. And she's like, he's like, you never called me. But this is very different because I think a woman popping up and saying, hey, I wanted to see if there was another chance is a very cute thing to do. Whereas a guy popping up and being like, hey, I've always wanted to get to know you.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. Just one more thing I was going to say was that in reference to this thing we're talking about, that Becca's not as attractive, so she has to look out more, or that guys might be there for the wrong reasons. That he might consider himself so good looking, and maybe Becca wasn't good looking enough for him until she became the bachelorette, and then he's like, oh my god, I gotta, you know, for marketing or for whatever, all of a sudden he wants to go on the bachelorette. I felt like it was super disingenuous, and she saw that.
Wasn't there a guy that was like, he was like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be on the show until Becca was announced, and then I really wanted to be on the show.
Yeah, they all see that.
I feel like there was a guy that did that.
Well, one guy I remember because he's 27 and he says, I've watched The Bachelor since I was 20 with my mom, right, and you were my favorite, and I only wanted to go on if you were picked.
Maybe that's who I'm
thinking of. So it's just funny the way he said it, because you're right. So people always say some version of that, but he was sort of specific with how he said it, and right, I picked up on that, but I can't remember who it was. But I thought Jake and Becca's interaction, she really reveals how she feels, whether it's true or not, with this really funny exchange where he insists they've only met once before, and she insists that they've met many times before. And I love to
talk about that for a second. But yeah, that's a critical, strange thing that happens early on. But I just want to go back to a couple things before we progress to that. The first is, I love how when they do their girl rendezvous, and then Rachel's like, we're empowered, smart, able women that can do anything we want. And I'm going to light up this sage, burn it in the house, and set off the fire alarm to prove that.
That
to
was
you.
So annoying they did that.
And then Caitlin was like, what the hell is going on?
Well, I was. What does it mean when people burn sage?
Well,
what,
it's what were they supposed doing? To be a cleansing.
Mystic, whatever.
It's cleansing?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, it's supposed to, like, cleanse your area, as in, like, get rid of things that used to be there and, like, start anew.
Yeah, like any good, you know, any good smart intelligent people would do when they are trying to show the world that they're smart intelligent people, set off the fire alarm.
Yeah,
and it is burning things in a house. It's like candles that are, you know, they smell good, but you're still putting things into the air. It's no different when you're burning sage. But okay, all right. So then we have all these guys rolling out. I thought the popper dude was pretty good. Colton.
That was cute.
And,
yeah.
And dude, he like runs a children's charity. Like, what's to say bad about that?
Maybe you guys can explain something about that to me if you want to take a break from your thing. But I'll ask it later. So.
Well, and ECR, real quick, just before, to be clear, when I say that was cute, I mean his entrance in particular. Because as always, you get people who try to, you're really, it's a fine line between not making an impression at all and seeming like you're trying too hard. And his, I thought, was a good mix where it's like, yeah, that's not going to set the world on fire, but he doesn't look like he's trying too hard. And it's cute enough to make a little impression.
We're going
to
meet halfway, but then we're not going to meet halfway guy.
Awful. I sent him home when he did that.
Yeah, that was our social media participant.
Yeah.
Right. He gets cut, right?
Yes, he
does.
Cut.
All right. He
was cut
participating.
By her.
He gets a participation trophy.
Right. Well, okay, maybe you guys can explain this to me about Colton. But when I hear someone is opening up their own foundation for blah, 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 it sounds like you're doing it for tax writing off purposes. And, you know, because there are so many foundations that do the exact same thing, right? Here's Make-A-Wish and here's this and all these versions of these things. I am very cold-hearted when it comes to these things because I do feel they're tax little, you know, shelters or tax write-offs.
Well, sure. Running a nonprofit is different than running an LLC or something. But I think the NFL as an organization highly encourages their players to do things like set up foundations. I think that's encouraged. So I think they sit them all down. This I know. They sit them all down. They teach them how to manage lots of money and how to be a star. That's part of the veterans do. There's veterans organizations that do that for NFL incoming NFL people, because so many past NFL people have mismanaged their money or, you know, end up without health care and destitute. And I think part of that is like, hey, if you have a cause you find interesting here, you know, we can help you set up a nonprofit because that's good for the NFL.
Well, then it's disingenuous.
Whatever.
I don't disagree
with your, like, we have privilege, we're going to help the non-privileged. But at the same time, it's like, it is nice that an organization that doles out tons of fan money on, you know, on the players encourages those players to set up ways that that money can be distributed to good causes.
I don't go crazy patting this guy on the back, you know, like he's not doing anything
out of the ordinary. And but he also said he was injured and stopped playing. So,
Maybe it's like
and there's like no guaranteed money in the NFL, so it's not like this guy's loaded, I don't think.
Well, don't they have a union?
Yeah, and there's a basic income, but once you're injured, that's it. It's not like.
Well, doesn't that give him a pension then?
If you play a certain number of years, I think. I mean, I'm sure when you get drafted, you get a signing bonus, and there's that money, and then you got paid whatever money his contract said. But if you get cut for injuries, that money stops.
That sounds sadder to me, the fact that he was raised by his parents and by himself, thinking he's going to play football his whole life, and then injured the first year or something like that. That's a story for all athletes.
I pity people that, like, in high school, very good athletes, and that's all they did. People like swimming, but if you're a swimmer and you're good, you got to be in the pool 3-4 hours a day. That's your life. It's swimming back and forth, staring at a black line on the bottom of the pool.
Yeah,
and
it's horrible.
If it's, like, what happens if you're, like, third in the Olympic trials and you don't make the Olympics? That was your life. And you were very fit and don't have acne and you have a tan. That's great. Now you got to, like, figure out what else you're good at in life.
You got to learn some calculus.
Now, Chris, on the other hand here, you're a well-balanced person who also does endurance sports. You're an example of how you can balance things in life.
Yeah, luckily I was never really tempted at all in terms of being third in an Olympic trial or something like that, but I enjoy at a very amateur level. Amateur. And I know other stuff in my life that makes me just mediocre enough to survive as well. So it is a good balance, Craig. I agree. who has Sniper, by the way? Is it Colton or is it the other football player?
Colton, I think that has Colton. Sniper. Yeah.
But he said something that I like, that he's like, my dog's not my life, which is rare for people on this, right?
They're normally like talking about that. He said something like, my dog won't be number one or soon or something, or
I like that. I know that the dog's name is horrible, but I like that he was like, it's a dog. Like, relax.
It's a gorgeous dog too. It's an old dog. I think that dog might only have a few years left, but it's a really cute dog, in my opinion.
Okay. I like dogs. I like cats. I love cats. I think people on here go on overboard with their, you know.
All right, here's how I think we should roadmap this. Let's go back to Chris's guy who says, I only met you once, and she's trying to convince him that they've met multiple times and how weird that is. And then let's get to the model.
Okay.
We can spend the whole rest of the podcast talking about him. I mean, okay, that sounds good. That guy knows he's the star, and that's part of why he's so annoying. But yeah,
right.
Okay.
So let's try to figure out why this guy didn't know he met her and why that was important. Was he on drugs or something, and now he's clean, and that's what he's trying to convince her is his asset?
I thought he considers himself very good looking, and maybe Becca wasn't good enough for him before. But she's a bachelor. I know I kind of said this already, but it was like a very, it could be something like that. But he's also in marketing, like the guy that got called out earlier, Chase,
right,
is. So maybe she went on her suspicions of like, you know what, guy, I know what you're trying to do. I already know enough about you.
Yeah.
Now you guys can talk about the back and forth about them going, well, I met you once. No, I met you a few times.
I thought it was socially, it was social and political capital, you know, that she was using, that it's sort of, because I was wondering, none of us can know exactly what happened, but if you're a person who goes to a lot of parties and is social, it's not out of the question that someone would be at multiple of, right, those parties and you would never talk to them. And that's kind of what I got the feeling that he, you know, she had decided she needed to be strong. She wanted to be strong. She needed to cut someone to seem strong. She didn't really care either way about this guy. And she's not going to lose this argument. And that's a great justification to say, you never made a move. You should have made a move, which I think there are more times that that would not be, you know, he could be in the right, that you would never make a move on someone that you saw 15 times, but until the circumstances were right. So he could be in the right there, but you can't argue against her. If she says that, it's like, you lose, you're out.
Well, what I think negates, or what I think like trumps that, is the fact that he said, let me give me a chance to explain, right? And she goes, sure, like, go ahead, tell me something different, like, make me believe something different. And he can't do it. He's too, like,
because, yeah, he's an idiot.
Because he doesn't really care.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with both of those things. But in the beginning, if you're in a circumstance like that, I guess this comes down to a theme we've had in the show in the past. I wouldn't expect him to care at that point. To me, that seems more, it's like if you were looking to get to know someone more, it just happens that this is on television and she's the bachelorette, and so there's more suspicion because of that. But if Becca were someone I'd seen at a party for a while and I got invited to a party where I thought, oh, I'll finally be able to talk to her, I wouldn't, like, I'm not in love with her, or I don't have any special affection for her other than I think maybe we could make this work. So I don't think there's anything wrong with him being kind of caught off guard to have to justify, right, his feelings more than he thought he was going to have to.
I didn't like him either.
I mean, I would have cut him.
Yeah, but I think we can safely assume that he knew she was going to be the bachelorette. He came on it to kind of, because this is my thinking. This is my, like, way past assumption, but still based on assumption. He found out it's her. He probably thinks he's one of the best looking guys in her circle of friends. He's like, of course this girl would want me because I've been too good for her in the past. Here's my chance to go on TV and string her along for a little bit, look like a good guy. Also, I'm in marketing. Who knows how you get a boost from being on TV doing that? I mean, I don't know enough about, I guess, I don't know what you do in marketing. She's in marketing too, by the way, Becca. And he's like, you know, I'm going to go on it. He didn't expect to be called out. And then he was. And he's trying to defend himself because at this point, if he really was interested in her, he could have said something like, no, listen to me. I've seen you a lot. I remember you're wearing this and this and this. I really liked you. I just had no way to approach you. But he didn't say that. Right. So she assumes, you know what? You didn't prove your point.
Right. But she could have played, if he had done that, she could have played, you're a little too obsessed. You're coming in too hot. If he had said, you wore this, this, and this, and I, you know, he could have been cute, but we don't, I think we're prejudged to dislike him as she is. And I guess I just took away her emotional intent was pretty clear that she wanted him gone. And I don't think that if he had had a different answer, she would have changed her mind. I think he would have been gone with a different reason.
I mean,
she played it well. I just don't think he was staying.
Right.
I think he thought he was too good looking just by the way he carried himself. This is what I think as a woman.
But he wasn't that good looking. I bet
he thinks he is, and I agree with him. Like I thought he was one of the better looking men on the show. Like absolutely, maybe way better looking to me personally than the model, for example.
Shake.
The
The guy that got cut?
The little gentleman model, Jordan.
Oh, no, no. But, I mean, you think Jake was one of the better-looking men?
Yes, I do. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But that's
interesting.
That's my type, maybe. He looks like right. Jason Lee to me. But, who? So, this skateboarder turned actor that was on My Name is Earl.
Jason Lee.
What about Nick, Chris, in that situation? He was in a very similar situation. Obviously, there was sex involved, but, like, what about Nick? Was the romantic kind of non-confrontational romantic thing to do on her part? Is that different?
Well, let's see. Did Nick learn later than she learned? Did he remember, quote unquote, later that he knew this person that came on the show?
I remember he played dumb for like an episode.
Well, Nick clearly didn't like that one night stand girl. I mean,
he did.
I don't think he did.
He said he did.
Well, of course he did. He's on national television. But I think
okay.
he was just she was just a one night stand that he never called.
Oh, see, yeah. You guys, I feel like I know some things about the way it looks on my end, but I didn't think that about Nick. I thought he liked her, and she just didn't call him back.
Well, my impression of Nick, and it's a little early to tell. I don't think this is my impression of Becca, but it is early. But Nick. He liked the kind of erotic charge, right? Whether it was explicitly sexual with people, right. Like I'm going to have sex with them, or we have this flirtatious energy. So that's why I could see him being more motivated to keep someone that he had slept with around, whereas that doesn't seem to be Becca's style.
I think once you've slept with someone and you haven't continued to sleep with them, that's it.
But it's like the equivalent of taking her out to breakfast. Because he kept her on the show one episode too long.
Well, he had to. You know? I mean, he's tactical.
Exactly, he had to.
Imagine how that would look. Like, we slept together and he'd call you and cut you.
He took her out to breakfast. Like, he kept her on a show that she was, you know, like, oh, okay, well, do you want to ride? You know, right. Like that kind of, like, leftover thing.
I don't know. I guess I don't see anything wrong with either approach. Because in general, ECR, I guess this is just something that I see differently than you is that people being tactical on a nationally syndicated show makes complete sense to me. So I have this sort of cynicism that I don't think is unhealthy. I think you're foolish if you are kind of wide-eyed and innocent and you go on The Bachelor with your wide-eyed innocent platform. It's sort of like you got to shape up, you got to toughen up a little bit. It's not going to work. It's not the place to do it.
Right.
Well,
here he comes. Here is Jake.
As much as I want to keep talking about this guy, I think it's time to give the model his due.
Okay. Oh, before we do, because we're not going to talk to him about him ever again, Grant, my favorite, the electrician. I mean, he looks like a Mike Judge character, like a cartoon. He looks like a little bit Beavis and Butthead-y or like Boomhauer.
Yeah, he's got a large forehead.
Yeah. He was so great that he was like no gimmicks, down to earth, saying, hi, how are you? No like exploding whatever. And he got cut so soon. I was bummed about that, but that's it. RIP that guy.
Yeah, I liked him too.
And now we can move on.
So what's the model's name?
Jordan.
His name Jordan? Can we all agree he looks like Waboom's enemy from a season past. He looks so similar to he's like a more uptight, more quote refined version of that guy. I thought this was a joke that this was because I think it was revealed that they were both actors, Waboom and his enemy in LA. One was a comedian and one was like an aspiring actor, and I thought, oh, Waboom's enemy is back in like a character bit here. This is like his new role, but it wasn't. I guess it is still pretty interesting, but it wasn't that interesting. Yeah, what do you make of this guy?
Go ahead, Craig. You're dying.
Wait, are we talking about the
model? Little gentleman? Yeah,
the model. Yeah,
I don't know. You know, yeah. This is a common theme, like. What it's like to go on these shows, what you think you come across like. I mean, I'm almost like out of energy to deconstruct them, because it's who doesn't have the self-awareness to know how he's coming across?
Well,
I mean, even if you're prodded by the producers to keep talking about what people are wearing and what you're wearing and what people, you know, should be wearing, and you can't be that completely unaware of how you come across that this guy is.
Yeah.
That's just...
is it a role?
That's the thing. It's like... It doesn't seem like a role. So it's baffling my brain, and it's taking up more calories than I'm like eating, and I'm not necessarily I want to spend. So I'm conflicted. I both find it interesting and also find it like really uninteresting.
I mean, yeah, my prediction, and I think we agree based on what you said, Craig, is it's a good week one strategy, because you're going to cut through the noise with something like this. We remember, we're talking about him out of 28 guys or whatever it is. But how quickly does it wear thin? He's pushing the supervillain button pretty hard, pretty early, I think. And it's like you're going to flame out eventually once you start hitting that. So it's just like, is it a week three thing? Week four? Is he gonna? I don't know. It seems like his days are numbered, but he is gonna get through. At least I don't think you get caught with a personality like that in the first 2 or 3 weeks. I would say you're around for a little bit.
No, wait. So here's the thing with what Craig said. You know, there have been people who have really been. Who have been more divisive than they've been, like you said, Chris, like the supervillain type person. So there's people that people are just on their side. So maybe Jordan, the little gentleman, is what I started calling him, because he's so, you know, he looks like a little doll. He doesn't look attractive. I don't think he's attractive. you know, maybe he thinks. If we take apart all the producers and we're not taking into consideration that he knows he's on a show where you have to be one or the other, maybe he thinks he's being right. Like, he's saying really interesting things that are true. But at the same time, it seems like his only card among, like, a, you know, alpha male sports guys versus venture capitalists versus the new software world is fashion. And because... people are well dressed, obviously, because they're rich or whatever. That's going to make him really insecure, because he's not standing out the way he wants. You know, that's all he has going for him is being a little, you know, whatever, a little Ken doll or whatever his look is. Maybe he's trying to be. Maybe he's defensive, but at the same time, he's trying to be like, I'm making really good opinions and assumptions, and hopefully, I'll get a lot of airtime. But then again,
yeah. He did get a lot of airtime. I think he got the most airtime out of anyone. Right. If not, in my memory, he has the most sound bites. And it's usually these kind of catty remarks in his one-on-one interview.
Yeah.
He's really passive aggressive. He has maybe one moment we get to see where Chicken Suit is sort of challenging him. And we don't get to see him challenge Chicken Suit back. The Chicken Suit guy's like, so you haven't talked to her yet? Are you going to go talk to her? He's sort of trying to push him. Yeah. And we get a response in his one-on-one interview, but you can feel in the energy there that it's very... It's sort of like, why I don't understand. He's not really aggressive with her, and he's not really a buddy with the guys in the house. Yeah. And usually, if you're going to go far, you need one of those things.
Well, it's tough. Like, it's tough when... Especially when something is based on your body and your looks. Like, we're looking at the... I keep saying, like, I'm sorry to our listeners. I'm really trying to cut down on my likes. The black football player
Clay,
he looks like a football player. He's big, he's strong, so when he talks, if he were to talk about football, I would, it's like pathos or something, right? I would listen to him. Same with the Harlem Globetrotter guy. He's tall, he's thin,
Christian.
So I believe him. I just have that connection because he looks like what he is, what he does, and in a physical field like sports that is important. Now, this fashion guy, It's also an industry based on looks. So I think that gives us the agency to talk about these kinds of things. I have no neck. If you've met me, I don't really have a neck. It's not one. My neck length is not a trait I find all that great.
What?
So that's why I don't wear collars. You must know this is easier. I don't wear shirts with collars. I certainly don't wear suits with collars because I just don't like that. I don't have a neck. I feel like I'm a turtle if I wear collars or a suit or whatever. That's how this guy is.
Right.
I would imagine a fashion model who specializes in suits would need to have a long neck in order to accentuate the suit. And he doesn't do that. There's a lot of guys here where their neck protrudes from the collar and it looks debonair. This model dude doesn't. He looks like a turtle coming out of his suit. So I immediately am not going to register him as being an authority on what makes guys look good. And he's sitting here talking about how all these other guys should be dressing. Personally, not wearing socks or wearing cutoff socks is fashionable right now. So they should be allowed to not wear socks with their loafers.
Yeah. Well, he does seem... I would love to see his work because I did get that sense that he is a model for something so obscure and esoteric, like it was made by an incestuous cult of old men, like, you know, something very specific where it's like...
I mean, he has an Instagram. It's not hard to find.
Okay.
They're kind of like generic black and white model photos. Nothing.
So he does try and do something for a broader public, I guess. But I kind of hear what you're saying, Craig, where I thought he seems oblivious in the way of someone who gets trapped in a very insular world and doesn't have any idea of what every... So, like, in his mind, ECR, like you're saying, he is right. Right? It's like, of course you have to have a tie or a bow tie or a pocket square, you know, some guys in here have a blazer and none of that. That's just wrong. And it's like, no, you've never seen this show before. You don't understand that maybe like fashion, you know, should be an attitude first and foremost. So maybe you're ticking all of your little rules, but you're right. Forgetting like the overall aesthetic. Like you have no aesthetics though. That's the thing.
Well, yeah. We're continuing with what you said, Chris, that, you know, he's not in anyone's camp, not the guy's camp and not her camp. He does seem not interested in her. And my experience, like, not interested in her at all, because my experience with a guy like that who thinks he's good looking and is not really, you know, I can see him being a catalog model, but only for that kind of doll look.
JCPenney.
Right. Yes, exactly. A chair model. I can see him being attracted to only the opposite of him in the model world, like the super sexy types, and that's it. Because he doesn't have that super sexiness. He's, you know, there's models that are like, whoa, that guy is so good. That guy doesn't, you know, that guy's so good looking, but he's not that type. So he needs to compensate with like a sex bot. It's a very like, I've only seen it, you know,
that Steven Spielberg movie, AI, there was the guy who was a sex bot.
Jude Law.
Yeah, there you go. There's an example of a Sex Master 5000 or whatever his brand was.
I wonder if, I guess this might be a Bachelor Masters first where I might go off to the internet and look on a source that's not abc.com to find out more about a person, because I am intrigued to see, because he also strikes me, having not looked at anything online, his Instagram or anything, as kind of asexual too, to your point.
Yes,
he's
like, yeah.
Is it amorphic? Kendall. Is that the right term?
Or just Kendall, man.
There to sell, well, I mean, that's a thing too. He's there to sell the product, not himself. And sometimes, is this still a thing, the Air Mall? I don't know if our younger listeners will know what I'm talking about.
Sky Mall.
Sky Mall, yeah.
Yeah.
The models in there are like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not there to sell a sexy ideal. They're there to sell a hose that will auto coil or something.
Yeah, they're the background asymmetrical people that you never notice, because if you did, you'd be like, oh, like you don't want to notice them.
Right.
You want to look at the bear, with
it's selling functionality. It's like, that's a person, that's a human, they don't have any diseases that I can see, I bet that hose will work.
And their eyes are not crooked, otherwise they would be in a horror movie per our last podcast.
So I our last kind of running theme that I imposed on us, and I'm not sure if we ever got an answer. I mean, I think we got an answer, but I don't even think anyone else participated except me in my mind. Of Ari's season was that, was he sincere, right? And we didn't, I feel like we got the answer of no, he was never sincere, except that he kind of ended up, I mean, who knows if they'll break up, when we won't know until they do. I feel this, my internal theme this season within Becca's is, because Becca's not a supermodel, are there going to be people with many intentions? Because men, on The Bachelorette, not all men tend to make the best of a situation. So if they're not interested in the woman, they're going to be like, "Ah, you know what? I'll just be here and market my cologne makingness or whatever the guy does."
And, Jean Blanc.
Yeah, and if a girl is not interested in the guy, she will tearfully walk away and say, "It sucks that it wasn't there. I really wanted it to be there," and then she'll leave. You know, so
yeah, that's how these two versions of the show are different.
Right.
Right.
Because women put it all in there. I mean, of course, there's always, like Chris said, there is that kind of level of, you have to be there for something else. You know, whatever yeah. that is. I agree.
Except if you're Lauren B. I think in the history of the show, she's the only one that was, like, there and had no idea what else she was there for.
Because Yeah, she's lobotomized, like, from birth. She doesn't have any... She has the two thoughts in her... The two-word thoughts in her head. One two-word thought in her head at a time. Like, she's
lobotomized, just, it's the right word. And we can say it because she did win a nationally syndicated reality television show. So right. I'll respect to her, but she is lobotomized. Cool.
Hey, speaking of horror movies, I got a question for you, Chris. A film question. So you've seen the Saw... You've seen Saw...
Yeah, and for a while, you know, I was a big fan of this.
The Jigsaw killer, the old dude. I never understood why it was important that he was in the room the whole time and revealed himself at the very end as being alive, but yet playing dead in the middle of the room.
You're talking about the first one?
The first one.
Yeah, and he gets right. up and he closes the door. I never understood why that was important.
Craig, I'm the biggest horror movie fan, but go ahead and ask Chris.
Oh,
it is true. ECR makes a lot of recommendations to me for films, so I was going to throw it over to you, ECR.
No,
I can take a whack at it, get it wrong, yeah, and then you can. So no. Let's see, because the first one is also pre-franchise, where I right. think you need to have like really good answers for everything. So my memory of watching the first one, because that twist at the end of the first is, I thought, really good. And I thought that it was to add impact, that it was more of like an emotional than a logical thing.
It's just
thing.
An ending to it, what they thought was going to be a single film. And then, let's just have him be the guy.
Exactly, because that guy, James Wan, when he made it, that he was still a really young filmmaker. And I don't know if they had any expectation it was going to blow up the way it did.
James Wan and Leigh Whannell.
Okay, did I miss some logic as to why... Jigsaw was there the whole time?
Well, to be clear, Chris, you are the film major. You are the film master. I just love horror movies, so I know a lot about them. But I don't know anything film-wise. But if I were to take a stab at it, I would think it's just for the twist. Because it's so important. In a horror movies had lost their twist at that point, or, 2003, 2004. And it was there was The Sixth Sense, but that wasn't a horror movie per se. That was like a suspense thriller. There wasn't this an actual gory twist anymore. People were just expecting crappy slashers. And I thought that was kind of one of those things where you're like, oh my God, can you believe? Because if you remember the music, I have the soundtrack. I like the movies okay. They're not my favorite.
I mean, I guess my point
is
like there's the twist where the blonde dude is the doctor who treats everyone poorly, and the killer was one of his cancer patients, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was an HMO, like he chose money over treating.
So like that was a twist. Like I think the old dude could have just walked in at the end and said, "Ha ha, you're gonna die." I don't see why he had to have laid there for hours on end pretending to be dead.
it was supposed to be like an insight into the mind of this guy who's completely like motivated and focused and is just such a like
he's such a good killer that he can lay there motionless for
he's become it was supposed to be kind of this duality of like who's the real evil guy here, who's the actual bad person, you know, because you find out that his wife gets killed, like her his baby's his wife had a kid and he was killed by like a robber. Leigh Waddell, the guy that's in the other room who's also a co-writer with James Wan, like they were very they're from Australia and they're like a little group what's it called, a duo. You find out all this stuff and you're like these poor guys, so it kind of goes above the gore slasher thing because there's no good or bad, there's these people that are one-upping each other on the bad things they do to each other. Right,
which is what they kind of literalize more and more throughout the series.
And yeah, right. the cop is troubled and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. All right. I get it.
So is that what you think of the model? That he's going to play some sick game with everyone, and being so inactive, he's just motionless in the room the whole time.
Well, what I like about Saw and Hostel, what I think they brought to the genre is this banality that I think you just mentioned. This you can be evil without being the serial killer. You can do all these horrendous things without being evil. Like, right. And I think maybe this model dude maybe in a way has that banality. I mean, I'm not saying he's a serial killer or anything like that, but
he is American Psycho-y, right?
He just doesn't have. Well, American Psycho does go into that, how he has no feelings, and that's because he's a sociopath in the film, in the book, but and I'm not saying the model guy's a sociopath, but there is this sort of, like, lack of, I don't know, sinisterness. It's kind of like the opposite of Corinne. You know, Corinne was carefree, didn't care what people thought, but it was intentional. Like, she knew who she was, and that's, you know, she wasn't going to take any beef for it. This guy's just sort of, like,
Well, I was gonna say, you know, I think what you're saying is advanced, Craig, but I was gonna say on a very basic level that unfortunately Chase, Christian, Jason, I feel like have a classic villain look. Mm-hmm. And to me, and I know you guys are talking about the eyeball thing, you know, their eyeballs being off kind of, or their eye placement is off. But this villain, this kind of villainy looking guy.
No,
other guys. Well, Chase.
Who's the guy we're looking at right now? The one that had to explain himself?
That's the Chase. Teeth guy. That's Chase, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of dashing.
No, what? Okay, well, I don't know. Says me. Maybe in real life, but he looks like one of the guys that steals the girl with, like, a rose in his mouth. He looks like an evil dashing guy. But like murders everybody.
So he seems like Industrial Revolution era, like American Pioneer West is going to tie someone to the railroad tracks. Like yes. He's going to be that, like the Baron that's out there. I can kind of see that.
Yeah, he plays me.
He plays that situation so poorly, though. That was one of the things wanting to get out in front of, he is just to bring everyone up to speed. I'm sure they know, but someone gets a text, Ben Stiller lookalike gets a text that says, Chase is a bad dude. Chase doesn't even bother to learn what's in the text and goes straight to Becca to try and get in front of it. But when he brings it up, okay, get in front of it. Instead of being charismatic and kind of playing it off cute and light, he goes out of the room, puts her on hold, like says, puts her on pause, goes to get him to bring him in, Ben Stiller, to pour over the situation in detail. It was so awkward.
Yeah. Well, the guy is
terrible.
The guy got totally caught off guard and isn't just sort of bumbled through the whole thing. I mean, Ben Stiller, I guess, did what he set out to do, which is torpedo him, but it was just stupid.
You know, if this were week five or a little farther down the line, I could see him wanting to be more proactive and get in front of it. But week one, really, any first impression, like, none of us know anything about, exactly, just make a little vibe. I thought he took it way too seriously, and he got caught.
Don't you think that Chris is his name? I call him, like, you know, young Ron Perlman. but I'll take Ben Stiller. Like, you know, I could use Ben Stiller. I could say Ben Stiller too. I feel like he kind of messed up in the like he shouldn't have gone to him in the first place.
I agree with that too.
He should have like saved it until he had more evidence.
He did put the ball in Chase's court, but I agree with you. He shouldn't have done that because I don't think that makes him look good. But it puts Chase in the hot seat more than it puts him.
Well, I hope none of them they're not anti-Chase because guy meets girl, guy has sex with girl, guy and girl stop seeing each other a month later, girl finds out guy's going on a nationally syndicated dating show. Girl texts another guy going on same show. I mean, the whole thing is just so stupid.
Well, it's not his fault.
I mean, what if not a bad guy?
Well, what if the girl is telling the truth and he?
Every girl, that's what breaking up is about.
No,
if you went to any girl that I'm no longer with, which is the girl I'm not. Any girl that I've dated that I'm not with currently. They're going to have something bad to say about me.
Out of, like, the, let's say, let's ballpark, like, 20 guys I've ever dated a little bit up to a boyfriend, there's only one guy I would ever text someone about and be like, watch out, don't do this, you know, to anybody. Or watch out for this person. So I'm telling Craig, even if someone doesn't like you, they might not go out of their way to warn someone about you.
Well, it's not going out of your way. It's you find out two people you know are going on the show. That one girl on Rachel's season got on the show with DeMario.
But that was his girlfriend, his live-in girlfriend.
Right, so but this girl, who knows what her motivations are? It's like...
It's true, we don't know her motivations, but if we were to believe the best thing or the most common thing, let's say, is what I'm saying... That maybe he's really is a bad guy and she's trying to warn someone. Or, on you know, maybe more what you're thinking, she's just out to destroy anyone who she used to date.
And
yeah.
Just to go a little bit more meta, what is a bad guy? I mean,
these guys are
in their 20s. Like,
she did not say a bad guy. She said someone that's trying to market themselves.
Yeah. Right? But that goes to... everyone that's on the show. Also, I have to agree, maybe he's a guy who's trying to market himself and something might happen. I don't know. And some hypothetical guy. I'm not defending Chase specifically here. But I have to agree because ECR, you say maybe there's one in 20 that you might say something bad about, but I bet there's a statistical breakdown that starts to happen where the probability goes up continuously because you might have that behavior. Someone else, it might be 4 in 20. Someone else, it might... And then if you've dated 20 people yourself, you just need the chance that some 1 in 20 is going to hit you as the one in their, like, whatever random number out of 20. And I bet your odds get pretty high. So I put little stock in it at first here until there's specifics because it's like, it means nothing. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. It could definitely go either way, and I wouldn't be surprised if Craig is 100% right or if I'm 100% right. Like, there's no way to know.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, the audience, right? You know, I'm hard on people from Nebraska, but there, a lot of people watch the show and get very connected to the characters and honestly hate a certain guy. I mean, look at Ari. I mean, that's, like, straight hate by most of America towards this guy for doing what? For breaking up with somebody... that he met on a nationally syndicated TV show and going with somebody else that he also met on it. I could just see people going nuts about Chase and him forever being hated when really he didn't do anything at all.
Well, you know,
he'll be forgotten. Fair.
Unfortunately, this happened
exactly.
Early.
Yeah. It's not going to be something that's going to be like the DeMario thing. If it would have just stopped there, not if he had gone to Paradise, but if it had just stopped there, he would have been universally hated because there was a very clear bad, you know, like, look what he did, look what happened when he got caught, all this stuff, right? But there's no clear thing for Chase. So right. I didn't feel there was an actual, like, I don't think anyone can hate him at this point.
I sort of wondered, that was one that I wondered how real the situation was. Because sort of to your point about Chris ECR, I wondered why he even brought that up in the first place. So that was the conflict that I was alluding to earlier that I thought, was that completely produced, because I don't see anyone acting that way in, right, like, of their own volition, thinking that's a good idea.
Well, remember, he goes up to the guys and he's like, hey guys, I have this should I tell them? They're like, oh, yeah, you know, he's not here for the right reasons, blah, 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 blah.
Of course, they're going to say that, too, because to say anything else, you'd be marked. To say, yeah, you should do something, you're not marked at all. It's like, we're going to forget that you said that. But if someone said, no, I don't think you should say something, that could stick in America's mind, being like, oh, you're defending, in this moment of Me Too, you're going to defend the male monster.
Right.
You know?
Well, I also think that it's one of those things where if someone came up to me and said, that sounds like a different version of saying, hey guys, what if I call someone out and essentially single myself out to somebody and create drama for Becca on the first night? Is that a good idea? And then they're like, yes, please make yourself look bad. Like, that's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that's another good, it only serves you well. You're right.
It's not.
But Craig, I sort of get your point. I think emotionally I understand your point, where I think in general with relationships or with other just human behavior, it's sort of like, I really care more about what people do than what they say. So I want to see how they behave, and because people got a lot to say and most of it's wrong. And that's where I also feel a little, it's just sad when careless words can hurt people so badly. So I don't know. I'm going off a little bit based off what you said, Craig. I'm not saying you said that, but that's why emotionally I kind of see the seed that you're coming from.
Well, to be fair, she said he's on there for the wrong reasons, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean anything else.
We're gonna watch this show in like 50 years. The entire show is gonna be, you have to say, you're here for the right reasons, you're wrong here for the wrong reasons. I was blindsided. I wasn't blindsided.
He's thrown on the bus.
It's going to be some robot version of the show.
They're going to distill it into all of those into an emoji. So you won't even have to say that. Right. You just tweet out the emoji and then it syncs them. And then it's going to all turn into smell-o-vision. It won't even be an emoji. It'll be a scent that gets put out of your TV and you respond emotionally to it.
There was an episode of Black Mass, the British show, about that, where everyone lives in some weird dystopia and the only way out be on a dating show and completely fabricate who you are and only talk in cliches.
It kind of reminds me of like I've been watching old VH1 shows, and it really did get distilled down to this thing. You know, it started with Surreal Life, which is really, like, it was really good. And then you just keep going down further with, like, the spin-off love shows. Then you get down further with the spin-off of the spin-off love shows. Then they go to Charm School. And then they go to, like, an I Love Money, like Fantasy Island kind of thing. And it just gets so bad that someone actually died, so they never aired these horrible versions. So it kind of stopped the whole train. But I feel like it made them all reflect, like, this is enough of this crap. Like, you know, VH1 just got really bad with that. And I think they had to retool, but it was in their best. I mean, sorry, it took someone dying for them to realize that. But and the dying was unrelated to the show. They just didn't air it. It was like Megan wants to marry a millionaire or something. But it was just so bad. They're lucky that it stopped them in a way. So it became this kind of like strange hodgepodge of shows. And it just was, it's like a monster that they're glad that it's gone now. But that's what it reminds me of on a lower level. But you guys are talking about, you know, 2,000 years in the future when we're all just one little tiny pixel of a memory card or something.
So it's so early. This is a completely inappropriate question because it's so early in the season. But ECR, you have such a long history with the show, and Craig, you've watched longer than I. I wonder, do you think, based on the premiere, and based on the end of last season, maybe, how is Bachelor unique at this moment in time, or how is it new? Do you think there's anything that you saw from these dudes? Well, and
I just want to point out something that came up when they show the omnibus, what's going to happen this season thing at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She falls in love with two guys.
Uh-huh. So it's more common.
I can't believe I fell in love with two guys, and I have to like.
It used to be a scandal, and now it's common.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
The the tease was pretty good at the end. Probably won't be this, but it looked like something seriously violent happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd probably be just a guy that falls into like a glass table, but it looks like a guy that, you know, jumps out the window.
I couldn't help but think, like, it was, it might have been Caitlin's season, where preview after preview after preview, they showed one of the girls slapping, and then you find out it was during some play. They were acting out some play.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so part of me is thinking, yeah, they're just showing that punch as if, you know, that's just going to be some made-up thing. But
it's always misleading. But they do use the line, he was lying in a pool of his own blood, which there's lots of ways that could be fabricated or taken out of context. But I thought, wow, you got me at the old sex and violence. It still works. I'm in.
Yeah, it was a figurative blood, and it was part of I can't imagine. They always do that, and it's not as, you know, and if it's a big deal, they'll talk about it the entire episode, and if it's not a big deal, it's like this tiny little thing that you're like, dang it, dang you. Well, did you answer the question, Craig, about what do you think is different this season? What do you think makes it different?
I mean, Chris, you know, I think you were kind of hinting, like, where are we at in the cultural context of the show, and in the Trump, post-Trump era with Me Too and
not post
USC professors just took down the president of USC and for sexual misconduct, your alma mater.
Your employer.
For those that don't live in LA, there's a giant school called University of Southern California whose president is resigning because of multiple sexual misconduct of their medical staff. But, you know, we live in a very complicated and righteously so important discussions are happening. I do think Becca is a good bachelorette because she is a grown-up woman with a career, which is something I like, whether or not it's a male or female. And these guys seem like legitimate dudes. There's no waboom. I think maybe they were thinking about all the stuff that's going on, all the craziness in the world, and they just thought to not cast some ridiculous character. So I don't know. I think we're going to have a pretty standard show, which could delve into actual issues from the past, like love.
Well, I always like new people. Like, I think the top contenders right now are Blake, the Ox guy, David, who I don't remember who that is, Garrett, obviously, and she said Chris was handsome, so maybe he's really good looking in real life. That's the Ben Stiller / Ron Perlman guy.
Right.
Those are my early contenders, so I'm always excited about new types of people because they're all kind of different. They're not exactly, I mean, in the banjo guy, I don't know where he is.
Where's the banjo guy?
He barely got a word in this time. He wore something, as my girlfriend had pointed out, she thought it was a bad fashion choice because it was like a floral kind of.
Oh.
But it looked like camo. It didn't look like a floral thing. He's in this weird kind of murky sweater, or at least that's how it looks on camera.
Maybe I see. Is he standing in the back right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Does he get a flower?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of one of those like half velvet, half not velvet things that kind of pops out like a you know, drapery thing.
Yeah, I can see that. That's what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wearing curtains.
Yeah, I like Leo. I think I always feel bad for these kind of stuck in the 90s guys, but I thought he was cool.
Oh, I love that he's a stuntman.
Yeah, he's so cool.
Does he get cut? No?
No,
he makes it.
He moved on.
Well, I'm still rooting for Globetrotter guy. I think he looks like a good guy. We'll see.
Yeah, he's too cool. I don't trust too cool, but...
His dunk was good.
Yeah.
He's very good, yeah.
He's a trick shot guy. I mean, Clay, poor guy, you know. He just feels so... like something, you know, bad stuff happened to him in the NFL or whatever.
He seems like a nice guy.
He seems so sweet, but just like a giant baby man, like not in like a way that he's dependent on people, but just his like blocky speech and like can't really say anything deeper than that. I really felt bad for that guy.
Oh, what about I'm an average Joe from Chicago.
Oh, the grocer?
My grocery store. Yeah, he got cut.
So stuck up, but he got cut. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt bad. He seemed like he was about to cry on the way out, though. I did feel the emotion of his cut the most. He was pretty sad.
Yeah. And it's just a rejection.
All right. I think my brain can't take anymore. In fact, the only thing keeping me awake at this point is that Below Deck Mediterranean is on in 45 minutes.
That's beautiful.
Well, there's Vanderpump Rules, which is the gold star, but put a bunch of people on a boat, good things are bound to happen. So I'll watch that before I zonk out tonight. But hey, we made it through our first content podcast of the season. Woohoo!
Yay!
All right, any last thoughts before we call it a night?
I just want to say I think that Casper makes a great mattress, and I've never had one myself, but it's an excellent value, and I just hope they're listening.
We do need sponsors. Well, we don't need sponsors, but we are doing this out of the kindness of our heart and budget.
Yeah, and in other words, that's no, Craig. I didn't mean to, drag capitalism into this. Just nope, I've got nothing else to say.
EZR?
No, I railed enough. I think I just felt very, feel bad, you know? Something doesn't feel like this is going to end too well, personally.
All right. We'll see. Oh, and the proposal, which we talked about at length last podcast, premieres the June 12th or something. So
Monday, June 18th at 10 p.m., right after The Bachelorette.
So that's when The Bachelor ends?
The Bachelorette will end, yeah. No, not ends. I mean, after The Bachelorette episode airs, then the proposal will be on.
So they're going to kind of stagger it a bit.
Right. This is going to be in
about the mid-season.
I did look for us in the audience when they showed the preview. So we'll see if we end up in one.
Well, we'll pause it and take a picture.
All right, you guys.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.